It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thank you for listening and tuning in, and hope all is well with you. As usual, broken record time, it's a beautiful day here. And got a little vog, but I'll take that any day. So it's absolutely beautiful. We've had some, for those that are listening on the far corners of the world, we've had some fog and some vog and salt and air from the heavy churning of the ocean. And so, you know, it's, again, still nice. People are still flocking here, calling it vacation. And we actually live here, so hip, hip, hooray. Anyway, many of things we're going to talk about today, and if you have any comments or questions, call in 524-1080, 524-1080. But there's all kinds of things going on. We unfortunately have the collision of the helicopters, of the Marine helicopters, and still waiting for the outcome of that to see what's really taking place there, and I'm just glad I'm not one of those people, because they paid the ultimate price, and I just have to ask, what price are we paying when it comes to that? I know there's this debate that we're too militarized, this and that, and we're warmongers and all, but the reality is, I'm familiar with countries, not just America, other countries that were neutral, and they were raided and taken over. So it's a big debate, and I'm sure it could go on for 2,000 more years and going unarmed and what have you. And later on, we might talk a bit about, speaking of arms, there was the debate about DLNR wanting guns and the hoo-hoo, the flare-up with Lopresti, Representative Lopresti and Cocciola, and with the new head of DLNR, DOCIR, Thomas Friel. And I got to tell you, based on my knowledge about the circumstances, and also Friel as an individual, as a person, and I can just say that, boy, when people want to make points or cater to their constituency, they'll do resort to anything without listening or without. You can't. Some of you might know of this that situation where it was Mr. Friel was asking for more budgeting to acquire rifles or long guns or shotguns. And my goodness, you know, I don't know, I can't even begin to start talking about what Friel said or didn't say or how he said it or how inappropriate it was or what have you. When I read Lopresti's comments and Cocciola's comments, and it's as though they're horrified that the gentleman want to get rifles and arm his men with rifles and shotguns. And boy, you would think he said that they wanted a nuclear bomb. And the reality is, just to pull a couple of examples, if it's not a reality, not just Muslims, I'm afraid of any religious radical. I just got to tell you, I don't want any of them, because I say religious radicals, and don't call me up and scold me, because I'm of my opinion, and that's what I'm built on, and I can go far back. Well, the people running around with sheets and masks on, burning the houses of black people, talked about Lord Jesus Christ and God. So, you know, when they lynch, you know, when they electrocute you, they say, and give you a prayer and all of that, and there's a priest there. So I don't know what is terrorism and how we can assign it, but I think that Lopresti and Cocciola probably should sit down and hear Thomas Friel and afford him an opportunity to just discuss with them. And it wasn't his original. We've talked about that issue and expressed concerns with them, the discussion of guns anyway. And there's this notion, I've noticed some of the environmental groups are speaking out that they shouldn't have guns. The game wardens shouldn't have guns. It's militarizing the conservation and the law enforcement. And let me tell you from a personal standpoint, if anybody that is true to their beliefs and true to understanding and use their education, defer to their educated background to draw conclusion, you would first understand what it is that the game wardens are faced with, what tasks they are. And I agree, there are many of them not just carrying a long gun. There's many of them, as we've shown, shouldn't even be employed by our law enforcement agency. But that's something, a different subject, and it should be. But they're on the force, and you deal with that in a different fashion. But I just as a game warden, for example, I served in California, and I had the Tehachapis from Redondo Beach, Long Beach, and all the way to the Tehachapis and the Interstate 5 and over to the coast, and sometimes Santa Barbara, Figueroa Mountain, and those areas I would patrol, and Lake Piru. And it would be, I'd find myself leaving my home to go patrol at 1 in the morning, 11 in the morning, or 11 at night, 8 at night. And I would go up this long, lonely road where there's nobody but myself and the poachers or the illegal guys or whatever it is. You're driving up the hill, and you got your lights on. And if someone wants to, entertain themselves and assault you, they can do it from a distance with a long rifle. So this is a reality. The game wardens are faced with a greater danger. And now some of you might dismiss that and say, well, that comes with the job. Well, it also, going home alive comes with the job too. So you understand. And so you, on occasion, you will find yourself chastising hunters who were some 300 yards, 400 yards, and you find them pointing their rifle at you and looking through their scope. And when you make contact with them, they said, oh, I was just trying to see if it was the game warden that I knew or something like that, or just looking. And so that just brings home the point that the request for guns is the least of our problems if you're trying to talk about from the point of Cocciola and Lopresti talking about militarization of police forces. In taking away rights, go to the airport and you have to take your shoes off there. So there must be a reality, something in our culture or in our society today that poses a threat, and it isn't just Muslims, it isn't just Christians, it isn't just Catholics. It seems to go across the board when you have individuals that are just mentally unstable, having a difference of opinion and resort to violence to express themselves or to accomplish something. So I saw this as a very, in my opinion, I'm not speaking for Friel, and I know Thomas Friel, and I have known him since the day I got off the boat to come here. And I've never heard one foul remark about anybody. I mean, he's part Native Hawaiian, he's just a good person. So I wish I had the chance, the opportunity, and I don't want to get into the fray, but I just read the different, it's Hawaii News Now, and Civil Beat, and then the comments about this issue, and I must tell you, it's the timing. It doesn't help when you have an officer who's been arrested and allegedly assaulted a young lady while on duty in uniform. We have bad apples and everything, but to just come out from a standpoint of they're being militarized and they don't need the guns and we're trying to equip, I think that if you step back for a moment, for example, Lopresti, Representative Lopresti, sometimes we act and we state things that I don't know what it is. We get motivated for political reasons. We elevate ourselves at the expense of others or something. There's that behavior that we find in human nature. And I tell you, if you want to talk about militarization, let's just take a gander at the just the basic security measures at the Capitol where Lopresti sits. Now, there are armed men there, and this is supposed to be, and there's the sheriff and the other policemen with carrying weapons, semi-automatics, and very lethal. And they're there to protect Lopresti. They're there to protect you when you go to exercise your rights and freedom of speech and benefit from the Constitution that we all supposed to abide by. And so when you start to say, if you look at most people that have this big gun debate, many of them find themselves living in gated communities with a security guard. They work at a place where there is a security guard. And it's a different world. So if you were really worried about militarization and all of that, and if you were true to your word, you wouldn't wait until Friel come and have a discussion, and then you grab him and say, oh, I think I can flesh out some political points on this. And in fact, you should have started a long time ago when you saw a sheriff walk up, because some people find that offensive when they go to the state capitol to exercise their rights and being met with the sheriff with a gun. I mean, just the sight, that visual. So I think it's unfortunate that the debate, and that we do have terrorism, and it's unfortunate that sometimes we all speak, and if it just depends, you can say the right thing and still be dead wrong. You can say the wrong thing and be right, depending on the crowd or the individual who is willing to, if they share your ilk or they have some middle-of-the-road position that they want to take to elevate their position or their strategies or their discussion. So this thing about guns and giving the policeman, if you've ever, and I mean if you're ever going to be fair in your assessment and speaking and judging that giving a conservation officer a long gun or a shotgun, and then you object based on what you feel, I think that is just not fair, and it's not good, it's not rational, it's not sound. And that there are incidences in my experience, in my work history as a game warden, where you patrolling Huntington Beach there in California, or right there in Redondo Beach and Hermosa Beach and those areas. And you come off the beach patrolling, and you walking down the sandy sidewalk, and all of a sudden there's a bank robbery and taking place. What do you do? Oh, well, I'm just a fish cop, so that ain't my business. Well, the problem is when they backing out of the bank and they start to run and you're standing there between them and wherever they're going, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? It becomes a reality. It's not about gunplay. It's not about a fish cop who want to have a bigger gun. It's about you found yourself in a predicament just in your normal behavior, the daily patrols, and there you are exposed. These things happen, and they have happened, and it has happened and present itself and will present itself. And there are some questions that Lopresti could ask. Well, you know, if you get these guns and we give you the money, do you have enough money for security? Do you have enough money for training? Oh, and by the way, you know what, Mr. Friel? I've been on this job for a couple of years now, and I do apologize for you, me springing on you this issue about guns and militarization of it, because as a state representative, I should have taken upon myself to look at the budget that took place some couple of years ago, and look at that and go back and see if the legislators already advised and gave funding, approved fundings to buy long guns. And I understand you have several of them in possession now, but you don't have enough to satisfy the union requirements. You know what, Mr. Friel? Welcome aboard, and I'm here to help you to do that. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Friel, I've been here for a couple of years now, and I do apologize for failing to look at, to see if all of your officers or if any of your officers have police officer standard training. And then that would, you would abandon this discussion about militarization. You'd learn that the state Department of Land and Natural Resources operates without peace officers standard training for any of its men. It has no academy. It has no standard training. So willy-nilly and silly-billy and anybody else that can get a job. And standard of our operations, you know, SOPs and all of that are not in place. So if you're worried about militarization, I think that I would say, not in a fashion to chastise you, but I would say that the challenge that you presented now to Friel or anyone else or Case, or and I'm not defending any of them, and understand, I'm speaking from me as his host here. And so you really would be tasking yourself and others, even the environmentalists that claim that they're worried about the militarization and giving long guns. You know, I'd like to see that just in a comical sense, if it's the equivalent, I say, is giving your stick and say, here's a dinner, eat. Not chopsticks now, just a stick. And you would be offended because you know that you would need other utensils and you've become familiar and it dictates what is served, whatever the composition of foods there. So with this debate about the guns, and I must tell you, we should never, ever be motivated to arm ourselves and in a department because of we focus on one group or profiling. But again, listen to the entire statement. If you go to EnviroWatch.org, you'll see that there are people here and that I've documented. And look under the article, Aliens Aboard. I investigated and found out where people come in from the fishing community and all of that and the foreign fishery. And ISIS know of these people coming in, and it's accepted. It has been accepted for some while now. So I just think that rather than slamming a person who just came on board, I have to tell you, you know, for Cocholo and to chime in and bring it to that, to say that Mr. Friel's ethics and his dislike for Filipino people and what have you, then, you know, I detest crooked politicians. I think one of the most obscene, obnoxious things there are in the American fabric is a crooked politician who take bribes. A crooked politician who underreports the monies that they get in their campaign. That, to me, is more sinister, because if we have a culture of that, then we don't have access to a clean and clear government with transparency and justice and ethics. So, you know, to play that game, and I'm not defending Thomas Friel, but I'm seizing the opportunity to say, well, if you, Mr. Cocholo, if you do have ethics and you're worried about the American fabric, then you need to do some laundry, you see. You need to look inward, look at yourself, and don't spring on people, because you're not operating from a good foundation. I mean, what do we not trust about you? What do we trust about you? And we know historically to be found in your predicament or your position to take monies and what have you. You see, Case and people that were appointed by the government and working for the government can't say these things. And I think the most obnoxious thing, again, is a politician who lie, steal, and cheat from the people and then come back with no shame, hop from one seat to the other, and then project your values on the rest of us. And those values are misplaced, and there is no way anybody would publicly come in. We're not back in Texas. where they would sit here in Mississippi with someone and say, yeah, I hate Muslims, or everything we do is because of the Muslims and the Filipinos. You know better. But that's the joy of America, you see. While protecting it, you even get to protect some of the crooked politicians. Isn't that a funny thing? That's the unique thing about America. I don't know anybody predicted that. But even the crooks have rights. Even the crooks can sit in office. You understand? So I don't know if it's the long gone or it's just the long road that we have to travel to get things right. But I watch that, and it's unfortunate. There are real issues out there about hatred and racism and just the bigotry that exists. The policemen, when they go to the areas to kick out the people because the mayor, the young Hitler, wants to do it for the last 6 years, chasing them around, they have guns. How do you think those people feel? Is that militarization, or there is an element out there that will assault policemen and assault the public, and the policemen have found that they need these weapons? History speaks for itself. So I think that the liberal, and I'm probably one of the most liberal people you'll ever get a chance to talk to, ever. I don't give a rat's butt about anything that goes on in your life or whatever. You do what you want to do, and as long as it's legal and it's not offensive to other people, have at it. Because whenever you get to where you're going, it's somebody else that's judging you, not me, because I can't judge myself. I don't even, still don't have an assessment of my own personality. But this thing about to come out and say militarization, and you know, Parks, for example, is Claude Dallas, is a gentleman, read it up, that killed the game warden. And let me just say to you, you're more likely to come in contact with a convicted felon or murderer or what have you as a game warden as you're likely as a police officer. Because let me explain to you. If a person is broken out of jail and goes and break into a house and steal a gun, he's on the run. He's on the lam. Well, he knows if he can just make it to Waianae up there in the hills, up there Kuakala, he could find out, eke him out a living and once in a while come down. But there's a game warden that drives up there, and the game warden sees a campfire, and hunting season's open, depending on when it is. And this game warden is just a routine, and all of a sudden, all hell break loose. And this game warden has in his hand, at his disposal, a 9mm Glock or whatever is issued, and that's it. But Peter over there, who broke out of jail and or is on the lam or came from the mainland and were living over here hiding out, has acquired himself a nice rifle. This ain't got nothing to do with people, Muslims and the Palestinians or Israelis or anything. This is having to do with what happens in America, a reality. And so there is this gunfight. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? The guy with the big gun and long range wins most of the times. So it is not like you're just, there's some things that are broken at DLNR and they must fix and they have to fix. And the discussion should be trained on the issue, how do we fix it, not if they're being militarized. Bringing them up to standard. So, you know, in California, there's always in conservation, law enforcement, it's a strange thing because people tend to separate. The law is a law. Criminals are criminals, and they don't give a rat's butt about whether you are a game warden or the FBI, when they see a badge or they see an official truck, it's wartime, folks, period. They don't discern or distinguish, that's just a game warden. They know that he's a conservation officer. And then there's been debates where game wardens, it's been a long debate, well, and policemen, don't go into a bank with your gun on or stopping by the bank on a lunch date. These are people like Cachola and Lepresi and others who don't know all there is to know about these situations and hadn't bothered or tasked themselves with understanding. So you go in and you say, well, I'll just leave my weapon in the trunk of my car until I come out of the bank. Well, you shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff anyway, but it's legal and it's okay as long as your agency has no rules. So you're walking in, and here's Johnny just passed the clerk a stick-up note. He turns to leave with his loot, and there is game warden Lullaby standing there between him and that door. And all he sees is a badge, and he don't see a gun. He does not think, oh, badge, no gun. He thinks obstruction, and my freedom is jeopardized, and this is my whole game has been disrupted. So for those who are out there in the environmental community, and I know you mean well, and I know, but please understand when you cross that line and start dictating what an officer should or shouldn't have, at least go and task yourself and say, what gives? What is it that would prompt you, Mr. Officer or agency head, that would make these requests for these guns? Is there unique circumstances that we don't know about? Or I got a chance to say something on the evening news, so what do I say? Oh, militarization of the game warden department and the conservation department. They don't need no guns. You see, that is not the way things go. And in fact, game wardens, keep this in the back of your head when you're making these decisions about militarization. One of the most dangerous law enforcement jobs there are is a game warden, because most of the time you're traveling alone, number one. You're doing in backcountry in rural areas, number two. You're out there either as simple things as closing the park at 8 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock, depending on where the park is, and locking the gates. And there you are. You could, just a simple locking a gate could escalate into a violent interaction with someone in the park that have been drinking. Know these things happen, know they exist before we place our values and project, because when that person comes home, there's a likelihood that there's a little boy and a little girl and a wife and a dog that they call family. They didn't sign on to go and expose themselves to a danger while you were legislating and sitting there playing games about, well, you know, why do you need this and whatever, and I think it's militarization. They took the job with the expectation that we will have them out there protecting our natural resources, and we would equip them with the proper equipment to, you know, you don't take a knife to a gunfight, that kind of analogy. And I'm not, I don't even believe in, even though I carried guns for a long time in on duty, I don't believe in having guns other than just for protection in the house, period. Now, I know some of you, but understand, when game wardens leave home, they leave a family. Like you, when you leave home and turn that key and start that car up and leave, you left your children at home and you made sure they were at school and whatever the routine is. And you felt safe. So we're taking this, and things change and have evolved where there's great dangers, but a game warden leaves at home and just merely going to the shoreline and checking a fisherman. 99.9.9.9 to the umpteenth tenth. the person that he contacts to see that that person is complying with the laws of the state and conservation and fishing or hunting or whatever it is, especially fishing, will have a knife. You hear what I say? Will have a knife. Now, a policeman might on occasion, but everybody he pull over or come in contact with that's violating. He pull over a lady. There's an 88-year-old lady who turned the wrong way and went change lanes without signaling, or a young man and has no license. You don't expect a weapon to be involved. But a game warden, and I call them game warden. They call them here conservation officers or conservation police or whatever they, you know, or doe care officer. But the reality, ladies and gentlemen, is that there is a weapon involved in 99% of the interactions as far as resource taking. Now they going to the park, even at the park. You walk up there and there's a guy required to have a camping permit or reservations for a certain site. And you're approaching him and here he is with a long fork and doing some barbecue. Just understand, now you might say, well, he doesn't need a long gun for that or a rifle for that, which is true, may not. But again, my point is, you as a person who's sitting up in the balcony watching this show unfold, didn't see the first scene or the second scene or the third scene or whatever, and you're coming into play and you're projecting on an entity or a law enforcement body that is asking these things out of experience. As things evolve, people have changed, you know. And remember now, if you go out as a game warden for checking hunters to make sure that they're all complying with their tags or the type of guns or what they're using, they all have a gun. It's a reality. And so I do believe, and even if it came out of the mouth of others, other than Romy Cotrola and what have you, I would still say the same things. At least task yourself with knowing something about the game wardens. Know that much, because if not, we're going to subject innocent people like the game warden, who thought they were signing up for do a job because many of them love their job and love to want to protect the conservation, the resources of the state and what have you. But they didn't sign up to be exposed to a danger and then be challenged and be taken to task and because one person sits and hears something in a hearing and then takes off and run with it, and then the issue has little or nothing to do with reality, you see, because I believe the Oklahoma bombing was not, you know, and many of you draw from that, say, well, you know, terrorism comes in many forms, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've been terrorized by southern white people for a long time in my life. But that don't mean all of them are evil. And, you know, so when we see these things and they unfold and you read it in the paper, and the thing about I watched some of the comments and I read some of the comments in the online version, and there's something, I guess we got to learn to expect that and know that people, they will unleash certain remarks and things as if there's anonymity because they got a picture of a puppy licking a lollipop and that's their image and that's who they are, and they, you know, kudababy@yahoo.com or something. And so it's hard to rationalize with kudababy@yahoo.com, who has a picture of a puppy licking a lollipop, and understand and have a rational conversation with kudababy@yahoo.com. you understand, it make it difficult. So Kuda Baby say anything that he wants to, and then Kuda Baby Jr. reads it and writes back, and then it catches fire. So anonymity, and some people do give their comments, but again, I read many of them and I thought, wow, I'm glad I'm no longer in that business, because my situation was a reality. You driving a lonely road at 3 a.m, and there is your nearest backup is by helicopter to respond. You bleed to death by the time you got there, by the time they did find you. So understand this. Lepresti, if he's listening, and if you get the occasion, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to any of them, but ask the basic question. Does the officer have proper bodyguard, body armor? Well, that would be militarizing, and I'm sure if it's in the same vein, you would see it. But it gives that officer a chance, second chance, if he's shot at. So does DLNR have the right budget to... And if you worried about monies and all, ask the governor to refrain from spending any more money on this new conservation meeting that they're going to have. I've forgotten the formal name. I think I have it written down here somewhere. But talk to the governor about that, and take that $4 million that is being promised, and for international bodies to come here and sit and participate in a conservation forum of sort. You see? DLNR is paying for that, or paying a large portion of it. Abercrombie committed some $4 million already. In the meantime, we are having officers sitting in the office because they're on the rope, and we've talked about these things in other shows, so it's not the first time we've discussed these things. And, you know, when people are finding endangered or threatened sea turtles in trash cans at beach parks, then something's wrong. That suggests there's something broken, the system broken, they don't have enough money, there's something improperly being taken place or taking place. So we need all those things addressed. And so I would ask, engage Lepresti to champion a cause, to solicit money, to go on a ride along. Don't just sit there from the liberal standpoint under the umbrella of the liberal. And I'm also concerned that, you know, liberals, like, they're human beings. We just call them liberals, but they're human beings, and they're just as malleable as anything else. It just depends on circumstance, and which dictate their opinions sometimes. And I would say, task yourself, before this conversation go any further publicly, sit down and speak with Mr. Friel. Sit down and make an assessment and ask them, what's broken? What do we need? Because ultimately, it's not about the opinion that it's militarization of the DLNR. It's not about that. It's about protecting our national and state resources. The fish, the birds, the water, the land, the air, the forests. That's what it really is in this department, that the Department of Land and Natural Resources. And then protecting people from themselves and animals from people. Because, you know, people, you go out there to Kulaka, or whatever, the sandbar. And we've disclosed this many times. And these are the kinds of things that I would say, and I love being in my position, because I just tell you what the facts are and the truth is, and you deal with them whether you've got politics behind you or no politics. You just have to suck it up and listen. The reality is, you send men out and women out to arrest people and enforce the law on drinking and boating, but they can't even trust, they can't transport a person in their cars because they don't even have the right cars to transport. They don't know how to book people. They haven't made any arrests. They have to call the police department and tax the police department. If you want to talk about militarization, that could come another day. But as a legislator, how is it that you could come along and speak these things about, oh, there's you're profiling? Well, no, not profiling. But you could at least go and ask them, what do you need? Make an assessment. You had an audit. But make an assessment. And understand that most of the filling of these positions, as we see the governor and what have you, and they fill these positions, many of them are political. They don't bring anything to the table as far as how to manage and build and construct a conservation department. They don't. And they're not there for that purpose. They're there to get something for their interest and move on. Yeah, that's the way it goes. So this concern, and we're going to talk in the next hour. Like I said, if you wanted to call in, 524-1080. But we're going to talk about, go out to Haleiwa, and I know the recovery of the helicopters, they've staged and closed the beach there, but I want to talk about the boat harbor house there and talk about the state of affairs and the conditions of these things. That the one building is, I believe that if it's not condemned tomorrow, it should be condemned on Tuesday. That's how bad it is. The beams are rotten, worm eating, bug eating, lights broken. We'll talk about that, but again, This thing with, and again, understand, I'm not challenging Lepresti, I'm not challenging Cachola, I'm just saying that there is more to the issue of long guns and, quote, militarization of the DLNR. Because the DLNR, again, go to the sandbar. They have to rely on the police department to book people and transport them. So why don't we go and revisit that and figure out, maybe we will get them the equipment, we will hire the people such as Friel or whomever, and we will rely on them to be the experts, and if they say they need 5 bags of white flour self-rising, don't get into their head and say, well, you know, you don't need self-rising because, I think I have one question, Mr. Friel. Is the flour organic? You know, that's the liberal today. No, I just needed basic flour, you understand, to make some biscuits because I'm having breakfast with my guys. We're just going to go up there in the mountains and have a gathering and, You don't understand what I'm saying. So let them, the experts, be the enforcement people. Let them come to you and make these requests. And if it is about, you think that it's about profiling the Muslims and the Filipino and whomever, maybe it's black people they want to go. Ask follow-up questions and don't underestimate people or be predisposed that they're bigots. I say this publicly. I know Tommy Friel personally, known him since I've been here my 25 years, and it doesn't shake out that way. And any of you who exhaust yourselves and speak in that term, then you've missed something along the way of growing up, because adults make good decisions based on sound information and facts, not fear. And that's how we build a good... Hey, and if you're really concerned about all of that, then how then do we explain the rat, tattered, broken, dysfunctional state that the DLNR operates, the DoCare operates? How do we explain that if we have concerns for our natural resources, but then if we're concerned about making sure that nobody's profiling, must be a threat to all of us, or somebody's lying to us, because we, as I say, we go to the airport, we got to strip, we go through X-ray, we get profiled there. So take on the real task, legislators, and ask, and then those of you that really want to talk about integrity and the lack of bigotry, stop taking money under the table and then going back and serving as a legislator or a politician. Be done with it. Just leave public trust. Stay away from the public trough. Then we might listen to your message. You might be sound, but, it's kind of hard to take advice about preventing bullying from a bully. It's kind of hard. So that's my piece on that, and it's a long piece, but we'll be back in the next hour, next 5 minutes or so. And again, this is a Carol Cox Show, and we'll talk to you later. You can pick this up at carolcox.com later on podcast.
Your sweet expression, the smile you gave me, the way you looked when we met, it's easy to remember, but so hard to forget. I hear you whisper, I'll always love you. I know it's over, and yet it's easy to remember, but so hard. So I must dream to have your hand caress me, fingers press me tight. I'd rather dream than have that lonely feeling stealing through the night. Each little moment is clear before me, and though it brings me regret, it's easy to so hard to forget.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
You give your hand to me.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me.
Then
your heart.
Hello. I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so. And anyone can tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me. No, you don't know the one who dreams of you at night and longs to kiss your lips and longs to hold you tight. To you, I'm just a friend. That's all I've ever been. But you don't know me. I never knew the art of making love, though my heart aches with love for you. Afraid and shy, I let my chance go by. The chance that you might love. Then you say goodbye. I watch you walk away with someone by your side. Oh no, you'll never know the one who loves you so. But you don't know me. But you don't know me.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning again and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Again, you can pick us up at carolcox.com podcast and many of the other stories and shows that we talk about for the last 8 years. They're all posted up, so if you want to go back and just late night, plug in the radio, turn on your telephone, podcast, you can listen straight to it. Anyway, and in the future, if you have any news stories, ideas, or stuff you want to discuss on, please don't hesitate to send us an email at carol@carolcox.com. And you can also catch much of our work on Carol Cox Show on Olelo. Channel 54 on Sundays at 1 o'clock and also the first Thursday at 7 o'clock on Olelo, Channel 54, and then every other Thursday. So anyway, we're trying to produce quite a few topics here that so we'll be back in the studio filming and doing some stuff out in the field. And don't forget now the Honolulu 28th Annual Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday will take place. Starts at Magic Island on the 18th of January. Go there early morning, and there will also be a bell ringing on today at 4:45 p.m. at the Let Freedom Ring in every village and hamlet. It says, quote, and that will be held at the Park Chapel on the grounds of the Cathedral of St. Andrew at Baritania and Queen Emma Streets. And there's free parking. So, again, there will be a gathering. And if nothing else, unfortunately, we were told that this is for just for people of color at one time, but we all benefit from the Civil Rights Act, and we all benefit from the Constitution. And so why there's foot dragging, and even if it's out there and some not included, go join in. Bring in your banner, bring in your pictures, bring in your bullhorn, and participate and speak. It's all inclusive. So anyway, it's a good cause, and anytime we have an effort to remind us that we should care about all people, it's good enough for me. There's no fancy way of doing it. Just do it. But anyway, there's a couple things, and if you're inclined to call in, 524-1080, I'll entertain some calls and chat with you. But we hear about the rail and sucking up all the money and all of that. And a couple things that we're going to talk about over there at IL, coming around the McGrew Park there. When you leave that area, leaving Pearl City IL, going toward the stadium, many of you probably have seen. If you look to the left, you'd have to look kind of closely. You'll see that garnite they've sprayed to protect the hill from eroding and the rain from, and a lot of it is sloughing off. And the way they built that steep grade there to accompany the road, it's presenting a problem now. So a lot of that stuff, it's like a cement, and it was sprayed over, poured over the hillside so that it would retard erosion and sloughing off from gravity. Well, there's a couple of spots there that have broken, and it's been broken for some while. And you would think that the mayor and the state, the Kamehameha Highway, and anybody responsible for that would have by now gone in and fixed that. But it's been laying there for months, if not years, broken. And there are large pieces. And so I posted a couple pictures at carolcox.com. You can see those. And in that same area, there's one trash pile. And this is right by the Admiral's Boathouse there at Pearl Harbor on the bike path. And it's been there for several months that I've documented it there. And there's about 18 shopping carts, bicycle parts, dead fish, dead pets, dead, you name it, piles and mounds of trash. And you would think the mayor would be concerned with the people that are walking the beach access and the bike path that they promote, and you know, and it's right there on practically on the bike path to gain access to the bike path. You have to drive right by this trash, and it's been there for months. So these kinds of things makes me want to ask, why? Why do we believe anything? And we can't afford to pay the refuse people to come and pick it up, or the highway people to pick it up? Or is it that the rail is so important that every nickel and dime that we have it channel to the rail? And it's right on the rail path, by the way. You can't miss it. It's on the bike path and where the rail is going to go through. It's between the two. And so, and there are some concerns. I'm looking at something now. Possibly the plume or some kind of oil of some sort is bubbling up. I can't determine if it's from the asphalt. that was poured there, remnants of that laid and start to bubble. But it seems to be a heavy number two diesel or a crude bunker oil that is hardened. And so we're going to continue to ask, and we've sent the state pictures and informed them of it. And hopefully it's not a plume that the top of a plume that is there on the ground. But who knows? That area has been the dumping grounds for the devil. So anyway, that's that one. So go to carolcox.com and you can see some of the pictures. And I was out at Haleiwa, and we've talked about the boating and Department of Land and Natural Resources boating department. And I tell you, to no fault of the current administration, I will only blame them if it continued to fester. And it seems that what I've gotten from Case so far is that she is protective of Ed Underwood for whatever reasons. I mean, she's new to the streets, new to the beat, and you would think when you share with her these things, you'd see some movement. But the same old nonsense going on. And remember, I had this matter where Kiavi, there's a gentleman on Maui was renting land, and there was allegations that he was using some of it illegally. And it was investigated by the DOCARE, Conservation Officer, Resource Enforcement people. And they actually brought to close and concluded their investigation, the law enforcement branch. But when we asked for a copy of that, we were told we would have to ask DOCARE for it by the boating. Boating wouldn't give us a copy, so we asked DOCARE, and at that time, Radula was the chief, as far as I'm concerned, and he denied release of that. So we went to the land board and made our concerns known to them, and we were told the land board members even said that I should be receiving a copy of that after the chairperson looks at it and screen it. Now, this is a closed case. What it involved is money being made on the backs of the state taxpayer. And we were concerned with that, that someone's paying, as an example, we won't say the exact because we don't know the exact, but let's say $150 a month for a piece of land where that's valuable and people needing to store their boats, and then he didn't turn around and rent the land to 7 or 8 boat owners and make the money, and the state makes nothing. And so you would think that that would have been fixed, and we would have recovered the resources that and the monies that were made by this person. But instead, to date, I haven't received anything from Case, even though her land board people and herself, they said that they would give us a copy. So, again, that's that. But the tolerance for that kind of behavior, and this speaks to what is it that the money that is collected from boating and the grants that is gotten from federal government and federal grants, where is that money going? Now, they've built a new building at KE Lagoons, a two-story or three-story, two-story, I think it is. And but if you go to Haleiwa, we've posted pictures of that facility, too, of the boathouse. And as I said in the earlier show, the ratty condition and the worm-eating wood. In one instance, they needed ADA compliance. So here's what they did. It's a two-story building. Instead of modifying it or bringing the office down below to accommodate the disabled, they said, well, what we'll do, we'll put a bell down at the first floor, and then the disabled person can come ring the bell, and then we'll come down and talk with them. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your call. You have a comment or question?
Well, I don't know if this is in concert with your current thing. Since you mentioned DLNR, I haven't seen the news recently regarding Sri Shim, the person who got killed by a boat while diving. I'm disturbed about the lack of evidence or information that's come out as far as regarding who is the driver of the boat, the Zodiac. Was an adult driving the boat at the time or a child? Did the DLNR agents, did they do a alcohol or drug test on the driver? So many questions that have not forthcoming. And when you first saw the first articles, it inferred that two people were killed, but eventually the news, K2M, and finally it was decided that the stepfather got killed. And I personally know the Shim family for years. And so I don't know if you've got any more information on the investigation, but it sure is a lacking on the news as far as, you know, it was an automobile accident. You'd hear more information from the police about drug testing, alcohol, or did he have a certificate from the new boating rule for operation of a water crash. And so that's a large Zodiac, 24 feet. My Zodiac is only about 13 feet, which I, you know, used to go diving or fishing. So that's all I've seen. I'm not sure if you, I just tuned in a little. I don't know if you brought this up regarding...
No, I didn't, but...
DLNR, you know, that organization surely lacks something. You know, isn't the head of it Thielen?
No, it was Thielen, and now it's Suzanne Case.
Oh, Suzanne Case, yeah. Something's wrong with that department, and every time they get a new director, it doesn't improve. They continue with their incompetence. That's all I have to say.
Okay, well, thank you. I can't speak specifically to what has transpired on the boating, but there was concerns that who was going to do the investigation and those kinds of things. And let's be honest, once again, as I said in my earlier show, the earlier hour, why I was taken aback by LaPresta's focus on the mundane, the issue that he clearly, it wasn't stated that it was bigotry on the part of Mr. Friel. It was the part of the conversation we attribute to some of the hoo-hoo to LaPresse's way of speaking and what he said and how he couched it. But my bigger question is, just like the caller's talking, what are they doing? Well, not much. And in this form of an investigation, because who's going to do the investigation? And where and how are the legislators just year after year after year after year confirm the chairperson and then knowing and never ask, well, does it work? Well, I was told there were some delays in the handling of that, and subsequently the DLNR DOCARE will be or is investigating it, but I too had some of the same questions. What is in fact, what is it that they have done to preserve the evidence? You know, questions such as the caller raised. Who's driving? Where's the information? Was it a juvenile? Was it a person? Was he licensed? Was the boat registered? Did they have HA numbers? What have you? Was the diver wearing, floating a buoy? Those kinds of things. And it sounds like one might draw the conclusion that we're just wanting to be nosy. But when the benefit to sharing information about these, that surround these incidents, you seizing the opportunity to reinforce some of the rules that some people may not know. If just the mere utterance or asking the question, did they have a buoy, or making the statement, they had a buoy deployed as required by law, the boat was registered as required by law, the person driving, was this person, and all of those kind of things. And did he have a, was he operating drunk? You understand? Was he in an area, no wake area? All of those kinds of things. And so when you come out with that in your initial findings and you convey what, it reinforces what the rules are. It gives the person an, oh, I didn't know that. Or, you know, it tells people this is what you need to do. That's not taking place. And unfortunately, it might just fall on the floor, and who knows what? I don't know who the people are involved, but maybe we'll ask a question or two. But one of the things when we ask questions, we get some strange answers. It's always as if they're trying to put you in your place. It's that's what the DLNR and its public relations persons do and think. You know, for example, I'm always eager to help them, especially when it comes to protecting the resources. And I was actually involved in putting together the TV story and getting some of the information for the albatross. And I learned that they were going to make a public statement, they being DLNR. So I called on the day that they released a press release and asked that I be provided a copy of it. And of that day, I didn't receive one, even though I was promised. But then I received one the day after, and with the explanation that, oh gee, I'm so sorry, I got so busy, it was so busy. But then they did have time to send other people that requested it on the same day. So this is a kind of manini, petty nonsense that goes on, and I might be wrong and may have erred in broaching the subject such as this with this gun matter and the request to purchase guns in Lopresti, but that's to drive home the very point that the caller called up and expressed. This agency is so broken. And not just DOCARE, but the DLNR itself is so broken, you know, that I don't know. It's a great degree of secrecy. You call them up, and they're going to put you in your place. They don't no longer work with you. They're not outreach or trying to work with you. It's us and them in each of these departments. Like, I have questions, for example. When initially the albatross matter came up, these are some of the questions that I had, and here are some of the conclusions that I drew. And one was, the person that harmed the albatrosses, or the plural many, and the person that was responsible for that, I concluded, and no facts or anything, just taking what's available and thinking one or two things. There's someone that has a dislike for the bird because it has impacted them, and it could be someone at the airport. Who knows? Because if the birds settle in at the airport, it's possible that it would shut it down or cause a major accident in a collision. So that was thinking, well, maybe we need to focus at someone at the airport. And over the years, they've hazed and addled and removed and captured birds and paid for contracts to have them removed. So the second one was, given that cameras were stolen and the nature of the birds and the number of birds and to find those. See, albatross don't build a nest per se like the average bird. there's an indentation in the sand or gravel, because most of the island communities that they nest in don't have trees, and so they didn't take to the trees and nest. So they scoop up a mound of dirt and fashion something resembling an egg to keep it from rolling or whatever you want. But I drew this conclusion that given that the cameras were taken and the manner in which the birds were killed and where they were, the different locations, you would have to have either had an occasion to be out there on a work project or on a hiking tour where someone within the state had you to show you all of these things. There was too many things. And so as a result, I can't say the individuals that did it that now have been identified. As you know, some kids from Punahou, they state that they were, there's allegations that they attended Punahou. And Punahou has, the administration has actually spoken to this concerns. But to have those cameras missing and the birds kill in such fashion, I'm wanting to ask the state Forestry and Wildlife Service, did in fact they take any of these children that are the juveniles that were involved or the kids that were involved on any field trips or trail building or what have you where they would have become familiar? Those were my two suspects initially, and I had shared that with the law enforcement people that I accompanied out there on Wednesday, after the Monday, after I had received the pictures of them. So, again, you would think immediately if the forestry and wildlife people had, in fact, had the occasion to have the young kids that are involved in a group, a field trip or a sort that was out there working, then they should make that information available upon request. Who knows what they'll do? And I think I'm told that the city prosecutor's office will probably be handling, but that hadn't been concluded yet. I don't, the last time I had discussion with anybody close to that investigation. But again, this is an opportunity for me to say to the legislators, you have a greater responsibility than just handing money out and not going back and asking accountability. And for, well, why do you need long guns? You need to ask, okay, we gave you a certain amount of money and we did an audit. We're going to revisit that audit to see what did you do to comply with the findings of the audit. Did you change your behavior? Did you continue to hold them, the fellow officers accountable for their expenditures and management for what did you do with the money? Well, that's what the legislators should be asking rather than sitting and interpreting whether the person coming in, the director or the head of the law enforcement branch, is talking in a fashion that is bigoted. If he was that, then what about these other issues that need to be addressed? So that is something, again, I don't know what it goes all the way to the top. What does the governor think? What is his belief in how does he value? What does his administration think of the resources? Is it all about Mike McCartney and getting the tourists and making the dollar at every step of the way or what have you? I don't know. But this is what we need to know. And so with DLNR, what should happen is real quickly is that the DLNR needs to be, their audit needs to be revisited. They should be audited again, and there should be a concerted efforts by all of the legislators to bring in monies and designate it to train the officers. You see, this thing about the gentleman that's alleging that the allegations is that he sexually assaulted a minor on the Big Island. And Mr. Ferguson is his name, Ethan Ferguson. And he's only accused now. He's not been found guilty, so we'll give him that respect. But, you know, we've talked about this on Kauai. There is a gentleman, former Department of DLNR, Land and Natural Resources officer, manager, who is currently waiting for trial on sexual assaults, about 18 counts. And there's an officer we reported about a year and a half ago when during the presence of William Isla as chairperson, and that person took his life, his own life, on the Big Island. And there was some discussion that it was his personal weapon and what have you. And again, not to speak about that because of the sensation or the gory details. What it says is that how professional is the DLNR and the DOE Care when they subject people to law enforcement situations, and they go to fires, they go to car accidents, they go to drownings. What kind of training or what kind of medical support or counseling or psychological support do they get? Do they have? I know they may have medical insurance, but how do you check on these guys and, you know, that kind of stuff? Where is the psychological evaluation of these officers during their hire, while they're hired, and when they get involved in these incidents or accidents? So the DLNR, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, you take, for example, there's Wesley Choi, who was incarcerated, that we helped investigate and expose on this show. Lots and lots and lots of money was diverted and violated, and ethics violations and on, procurement and what have you, and funneling money to himself and to his own company, a shell company, a ghost company. And then there's the other gentleman, I can't think of his name, but on Maui, that worked for the Land and Natural Resources Boating Division, who in turn killed his three dogs and then set his house on fire and committed suicide. Now that's, one might dismiss all of that, and I would say, well, that's what, if Lopresti had some questions or concern, he may have found that to be a reason to ask questions, a house. But then in asking that question, he would have to help answer it by saying, we as legislators have failed, this body has failed to make sure that there's adequate funding, adequate to have adequate training and assessment and evaluation of these officers, and to screen. And the allegations are, some of the information is that the HPD actually informed the DLNR of Mr. Ferguson's in release and the background on why he was released, and was supposedly told DLNR, the HPD told, not suggested not to hire. So the question would be, who hired him? Did Randy Awo hire him as the chair, the director of the DOE Care, or the administrative DOE Care? Or did Jason Redula hire him? Who hired him? And that party, if it's true that they were told and recommended that and was provided the information that this person had already been in such violation, or found to be behaving in a way that he was released from his earlier job. I mean, things of this nature, you wouldn't want this person driving around if in fact you would have some concerns. But how did that happen? Well, it happened because when you figure out how the two top men were chosen and how they were appointed because of politics and what have you and what they were allowed to do and get away with, then it would explain how is it that we could have these kinds of problems in DLNR. And you know, while all that is said in naming names and identifying these people or reminding you, then there's DLNR, Division of Aquatics Resources, employee Randy Honnebrink, who pled guilty to having in his possession child pornography. So, unfortunately, or fortunately for Honnebrink, but Honnebrink is still there working for the DLNR. So, let me ask this. If you got that kind of personnel, where was Lopresti and his excitement for that? You would think it would have risen to the... Where was Cachola's concern? You would think all of that would have broken the bubble, right? Something should have happened. Bells and whistles should have rang. But no, they can only focus on DLNR for few comments made. That portion of the comments are attributed to themselves or how they couched it and stated it. So I think it's probably going to get better, but how much are we willing to pay? How much of an importance is it that the legislators will place on the value of our natural resources and the importance of the how well-trained and well-versed the employees of DLNR, DOCARE, are going to be? Are they willing to put the money up? Or are they willing to be the big spenders, as they are now known to be, to support and sponsor that environmental consortium that's coming to town? You understand? So it's kind of make you want to scratch your head and ask a lot of questions, because something just isn't making sense, you know. But the DLNR is probably one of the most important agencies there is in the state of Hawaii, given considering its responsibilities. DLNR is responsible for historical and archaeological enforcement and regulatory efforts. It's responsible for fish and wildlife. It's responsible for parks, state parks and state preserves, and state, many of the other parks. And then you have the forest and wildlife. They're responsible for the trails and what have you. And then you have the aquatics division. And I may have missed one, but again, they're not to be taken lightly, and they have a huge budget and a big responsibility, but who holds them accountable? And the danger has been, over the years, it's been used as a political football. And people get, you had Laura Thielen, who got Linda Lingle to appoint her. And so she came in and she had her game, and recreation and renaissance and things like that, and then clearing to make the wedding chapel. And you look at, see how the wedding chapel there at the Honeybee, you see what kind of behavior is going on there, and on again, off again. And so it's a hotbed of politics in the DLNR. It really is. So 524-1080 if you want to pitch in and have a comment on this or any of the other stuff we've talked about. But again, on Mondays, I don't know if we'll probably be off this Monday too, but on normal Mondays, I'm on the John Nolan Show, and we'll be there talking different subjects about various things, actually. And many of the subjects that we cover here on the Carol Cox Show. And, well, we're waiting also for the H-Power matter to continue. Carol Fukunaga had a hearing, and in that committee hearing, the city director of environmental services came in, and they're still denying that there is anything wrong, basically. They, I'm going to tell you, I thought Mufi Hanneman had the swagger and the ability to just dismiss you, you know, and full speed ahead to hell with the public. I'm not going to give them what they want. I'm going to give them what I want them to have, you know, and that's to come with truth and money and whatever. But this guy, Kirk Caldwell, I don't know if I can attribute this behavior all to him and credit him for it. I'm sure he has counsel, but there's a degree of arrogance that you should see. How do I put it? How bully fashion that the Caldwell administration, his PIO office, public information office. When you talk to them and you have the occasion to hear other media talking about their interactions, and it's like, wait, you know, the media give Caldwell a broad berth of respect and courtesy that I don't think I've ever witnessed in any other time. I don't know if it's because they support him or people that own the papers and the TV stations support him or what, but they tend to go easy on him. Many things I would give different stories, different sources, and they would tell me, well, your information and the documents you have is really good. And it really, it tells a story, Carol. It really shows everything. But we're going to have to talk to the city. And a week go by, 2 weeks go by. Well, whatever happened to the... Well, they never got back to us. Really? Okay. So you have that kind of climate and that atmosphere that Caldwell enjoys something that I've not witnessed in media. It's as if he's their favorite child. And they, most of them, they don't stick the mic in his face and say, look, here's your chance. We're going to give you this. No, you take the audit. They say, well, the mayor is not going to answer anything. They're saying, just go with Amamiya's letter to the auditor. Now, at some point, then if he's not going to answer you and not going to talk to you and going to blow you off, well, the next time he wants to have some early morning coffee with the TV station, just tell him we're not responding. This isn't about entertainment, Mayor Caldwell. This is about having transparency and being timely in your response and showing accountability or showing credibility to your projects and your behavior. But it's kind of a dance that I've not witnessed, to be honest with you. And I've been here for some while now and observed a couple of administrators and administrations involved. But I got to tell you, I don't know if it's because big money wants to support the rail and they benefit from the advertisements and all of those. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But I will tell you this. Kirk Caldwell enjoys a freedom and a courtesy that I have not witnessed ever to any other politician. And Mufi had his connections, but they, somewhere amongst the various news sources, somebody would come out and challenge him. But with Caldwell, we don't see him. Anybody tacking his feet to the floor and says, "No, you stand here, and you're the mayor. We're not going to talk to your managing director. We're going to talk to you. We are asking you. You are responsible to the people. That's who voted for you. We didn't vote for the managing director. We voted for you." Thank you, caller. Go ahead with your comments or question.
You know, a couple of months ago, I received a news release from DLNR.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject of that news release was about how reporters need to contact the public information officer or Mr. Dan so that they can get the correct news release on a particular subject.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that why? Are they afraid of a reporter talking to any DLNR personnel?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how are we going to get the truth?
Yeah.
You know, that's really bugs me. But the news release, what are they going to sanitize what really happened?
Yeah. And they do.
And your voting division, they need to be one audit on complete management of the voting division immediately. This has gone too far.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, and the evidence speaks for itself. The gentleman Underwood should be removed immediately, but again, you know, we don't get that kind of commitment or that.
Either that, or if the legislature is not happy, why don't they hold a public informational meeting on the voting division and ask some hard questions?
Right.
Why are they afraid not to do it?
And why is a building in Haleiwa rotting and about to collapse and the beams are rotting? And I mean, it's ferocious.
You'd be surprised what there's out there and not coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
Hey, thank you, brother, for calling. Thank you. Caller, good morning. Thank you for calling. Go ahead. Hello? You there? Caller? Anyway, you, the taxpayer, you, the citizen, you're really not getting, you're getting spoon-fed pablum, and all it is just water. There's nothing of substance. They tell you what they want you to hear, and they tell you what they think they can use to punt the ball down the field to someone else or to hoodwink you and move forward and get, you know, I mean, they're talking about budget and they're sponsoring, spending millions on out of the DLNR budget to sponsor a Congress for international people to come here. And if we got that much money, then fix what we have and then bring in anybody you want to. Bring in Putin and Yeltsin and anybody else and, you know, and wine and dine them and give them a fancy show and what have you. But it's ridiculous. And, you know, everything is about, I heard a case, for example, when the albatross were found dead, they said, well, you know, something about it wasn't a cat. You see, they get fixated on something and it's like, come on, get with it. If cats are a problem, if that's what you're trying to tell us, then get off your duff and join in and address the issues, the legal issues about disposing cats into the wild and releasing them when you move back to the mainland or you break up and get a divorce or not having cats outside and don't neuter them and all of that or having litters and then taking the litters to the parks and then the wild and releasing them. You know, but don't take sniping opportunities to do that. Thank you, caller, for calling. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Yes, I heard something about some meetings behind the Iolani Palace. I don't know if I heard about today and maybe tomorrow. I'm not sure. What, do you know anything about that?
No. Behind the palace?
Yeah, there was some kind of meeting. One of the caller some on the show before you, I think, they said something about, I thought he said tomorrow, and then I thought I heard another person say something about a meeting today around 11-ish or something like that.
No, I didn't. I'm not familiar with anything like that.
Okay.
Hey, thank you. All right. Thank you, caller, for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question. Hello? Caller, you there? Well, I promise you, when we get everybody to advertise on the show, we're going to get new equipment, and we're going to be shiny. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Hello, we were cut off.
We were? Oh, I saw the caller ID, and I said, this has got to be Richard.
No, it is Richard. And the last caller that spoke, I could address that directly. I'm going there tomorrow. Tomorrow there's a very informal meeting behind the Iolani Palace at 12 o'clock noon, and it is going to be sponsored by no one in particular, but as an outgrowth of the meeting on Wednesday where the city council accepted the extension of the surcharge. So the reason for the meeting tomorrow is a very unofficial meeting of people who are concerned about what happened at the city council. Now, in terms of your newspaper and Mufi Hanneman, the invisible hand of Mufi and his fellow dialogues, Adam Smith talked about the visible hand being landowners, investors, stockholders, the elite. They would control the economy. Don't worry, they will control the economy. So that's the invisible hand. And the city council simply goes along with Mufi. About a month or two ago, Mufi gave the presentation at the city council. He was applauded, and he shook everybody's hand. And let me jump to...
We're coming down to close, so hurry, real quick. We're coming to a close on the show. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm saying we don't have much time, but go ahead. We'll finish up your
point. Okay, then
there.
I'm going to end with, you know that the meeting tomorrow is going to be behind the city, the Iolani Palace. And this is the end of just the... There were a private doctor retired testify. They had the accountant testify. They had a man who represented a former private transportation business testify. And, of course, they voted against all of this, the passionate testimony against the rail and the tax. And They just voted against it. So thank you very
Alrighty.
Much.
Well, thank you. We'll talk to you next week, Richard. All right.
Thank you.
Caller, thank you for calling. You have a comment or question?
Has to do with the Queen's birthday celebration of the Queen Lilio Colony. And the other thing is that the albatross. These kids were from Punahou. Had they been from Wamanalo, they would have been sent to detention home.
Well, we probably... Hold on. We probably would have known their rap sheet when kids from Waianae and the brown skin kids get involved in anything, they first release a rap sheet. You know, oh, he had a rap sheet when he was 2 years old, remember? That's the way it goes. But with Punahou, we got a tiptoe, right? You there? Anyway, thank all of you for listening. And we'll be back next week. And take care. So carolcox.com, you can pick us up. See you later. Aloha.
I feel the autumn breeze. It steals across my pillow as soft as a willow. And in its song there is sadness, because there's no you. the lonely autumn trees are softly they are sighing, for summer is dying. They know that in my heart there's no gladness because.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.